ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 now, beautiful morning in the Crescent City, and it's going to be a little bit warmer today than it was yesterday, but then it cools off tomorrow and the next day, and we should be near 80 for the next week or so with a chance for showers over the weekend. Bruce Jennelson joins us now, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process. He knows the players involved. He's been in the rooms where the conversations have been held, and we appreciate his time when it comes to talking about things in the Middle East. Good morning, Bruce. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
I am, sir. Let's talk about, first of all, I saw the interview on 60 Minutes with, I guess it was Scott Kushner and Welkner. What's his name? I don't have it in front of me right now.
Yeah, Steve Witkoff and then
Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner,
yeah.
Yes. How tough was it to put that together, the fragile peace that they have established, and then we'll talk from there about what happened on Sunday or yesterday?
Yeah, it was tough, and I'll say President Trump definitely deserves credit, in part because he was really the only person that could pressure Prime Minister Netanyahu. Every time a Democrat tried to do it, you know, the Republicans would support Netanyahu, and President Trump did it, and we've had important things achieved already, right? These hostages are home. Some of the remains have been recovered and returned, some not yet. Some 2,000 Palestinian prisoners were released and sent back to their homes, and humanitarian aid has started to flow in. All those things are important, and they've had real benefits for real people, but the rest of it, is gotten, more complicated and a little dicey.
And also, to his credit, I saw him on Air Force One saying that, and this goes to, when we talk about these things in the Middle East, if you're going to go to war with ideology, who do you go to war with? Well, if you're going to negotiate peace with an ideology, who do you negotiate with? And then who can break that peace? And that's what we're talking about here that may have happened over the weekend, right?
That's right, on both sides. What happens when you have a ceasefire, it does two things. One, it stops the immediate killing, and it buys you time to kind of deal with the other issues. And what it really requires is that both parties that sign the ceasefire, in this case Hamas and the Israeli government, kind of really want it to make it work, and they don't look for excuses to say, oh, the other guy broke it, I'm going to break it now. And we're seeing a little bit, sadly, of that happening. The notion that there had been and what apparently wasn't even Hamas, it was some other, radical element in Gaza firing on Israelis, and the Israelis immediately said, we're going to cut off humanitarian aid. Fortunately, the United States said, no, you can do other things, but not that. So I'm not convinced that I think the sides are more interested in avoiding the blame right now than keeping moving on this. And if we don't keep moving, the whole thing falls apart.
Wait, say that part again, Bruce, about both sides are more interested in what?
Both sides, I think, are more interested in not being blamed for it failing, mm-hmm. right? They kind of had to be dragged to the table. And by the way, it wasn't, it's like in sports, when the quarterback has a good game and he thanks the rest of the team. This wasn't just Trump. We worked with Turkey and Qatar and Egypt on this. And they put pressure on Hamas the way we put it on Israel. And then neither side wanted to be the one blocking it, so they said yes. But now you can see a little bit of, you know, hey, you know, if the other guy breaks it, I'm going to break it too, rather than, can't we work this out? Can't we figure out a way to keep going and make sure that, you know, there aren't violations on both sides? I'm not convinced there's enough commitment to keep going.
So at some point, though, the United States did tell Israel, okay, stop, enough, you resume the humanitarian aid, and that kind of kept the agreement going or not?
Yeah, and then there have been, you know, incidents like you were talking about in the last 10 days since it was signed, and we've kept some pressure on it. And President Trump sent, you know, Kushner and Witkoff back to Israel, and apparently Vice President Vance, too. But, you know, there's so many components of this, and, you know, a big victory was declared, you know, far beyond what was reached. You know, it says there's going to be a so-called international stabilization force, you know, what we often call a peacekeeping force. You know, but the countries haven't committed to that, and they're not going to commit to put their troops on the ground, whether they're Egypt or Saudi or the Emirates, until they feel that the Israelis are not going to attack them and Hamas is not going to attack them. And so the amount of work that needs to be done is much more than, here's where I think the president went way overboard. I mean, claiming this is like the greatest thing in the Middle East since Moses split the Red Sea, you know, and you got to achieve that. You can't just declare it and then, you know, leave the loose ends to break up.
One thing that did interest me is, and this goes to, you know, I don't want to get you in a political vortex here or anything, Bruce, but you got to watch what political corner you back yourself into, because sometimes the people you back yourself into the corner with sometimes leave you there, in that Jared Kushner said that a lot of the Palestinians had nothing to do with Hamas and they were just victims, and he talked about how destroyed Gaza was.
That's absolutely right. I mean, before the war, say September 2023, you know, a reputable Arab polling agency did some polling in Gaza, and 62% of the Palestinians in Gaza were anti-Hamas because it wasn't providing jobs, it wasn't taking care of their kids, and it wasn't providing health care, right? And then, of course, they became even more anti-Israel because of what the war has done to them. But they also blame Hamas for putting them in this position. And so you need to find a way, you know, to not alienate those people by more attacks and work with them and some other Palestinians, what was called the Palestinian Authority over in the West Bank, you know, to bring some governance that's an alternative to Hamas and that's not an Israeli occupation or this notion of a board of peace that the British and the Americans run. They don't want that. They want something that they feel that they've got a stake in and that has some credibility with their own people.
One thing I did see was the CBS correspondent talk about the relationship between Kushner and Witkoff and knowing some of the players involved, but in a way, she seemed to imply that there was something wrong there, something untoward there. But I talked about you being in the room. When you talk about something, even on this scale, ultimately it does become about relationships, right?
It does. And look, there is a lot of money being made on the side here. There's no question about it, by the Trump Organization and by others. Okay, that's there, and that shouldn't be. Kushner worked in the first Trump term on what they called the Abraham Accords, which was Israel with some of the surrounding countries like Morocco and the United Arab Emirates, you know, agreeing to normalize relations, not with the Palestinians. So he did establish relationships. But every time there's been a peace agreement that's endured, I mean, look at the Camp David Accord that Jimmy Carter did 50 years ago with Egypt and Israel. It still exists, despite everything else. You know, I mean, who would have predicted that it would withstand all this stuff? That takes rolling up your sleeves, not just flying in and flying out, you know, committing to working out the details. And we're not seeing that level of diplomacy coming from, you know, from Witkoff and Kushner. And they need a backup team of people who also have relationships and been around the block more than them. And frankly, it's been more to kind of, you know, do the press conferences, win the news cycle, claim victory, and then, you know, say that it fell apart because of the other guys. And so I'd love to see parts two and three here, not just part one, which
so,
went okay.
But they did get the hostages back, right? So what happens now, and how fragile is this, and what do you think is likely to happen? It seems to me Israel crossed the bridge too far when they went in a cutter, and that's when the president got involved and stood up to Netanyahu and said, no, we can't, you know, we got to do something here. And that's how that led to the hostages coming back. And again, Bruce, you know far about, you've forgotten more about this than I'll ever know. But I'm just wondering what needs to be done from this point forward. And I think that's what you just alluded to make sure that we do have some kind of lasting peace here, and that in some way Gaza begin. I don't know who's going to rebuild Gaza, where that money's going to come from, but it's hard to find anything standing there, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it's been destroyed. Frankly, with oil countries in the region, you know, money's not a total problem, right? The Saudis, that would be the role of the Saudis and the Emiratis and all these others that make a lot of money on oil. Netanyahu has, you know, parts of his own government that still think they want to make Gaza part of Israel and build fancy resorts and all that sort of thing. And so, you know, they're kind of pushing in their government the same way some people in among Hamas are pushing for this thing to fail. And that's where you need, you know, the people that signed the agreement to say, I am committed to making it work, and I'm going to work really hard to make it work. And I'm not seeing that either from the Netanyahu or from Hamas. And, you know, that's the time you buy with a ceasefire, you got to use. Otherwise, you know, the clock runs out and things fall apart.
So what if you were looking at dominoes and you were looking for the first domino to fall that would completely disrupt this fragile ceasefire, what would it be? Or has it already happened?
It hasn't happened yet. You know, it's been contained. It'd be more attacks, and I think if the Israelis start to...
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARK machines roam unchecked, and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for teen.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Retaliation for whatever Hamas does, cut off the humanitarian aid. Look, I have a colleague here at Duke who's a doctor and who went into Gaza and actually created a children's village this summer, getting food to them, medical care. I mean, amazing and brave work that he's done in a humanitarian way. And I've been, you know, talking to him lately, and he's hoping that this will provide more opportunity for aid to come in. On the Israeli side, if they start to squeeze the aid, you know, there are other things they can do to retaliate if Hamas breaks it. On the Palestinian side, you've got to bring in the Palestinians, you know, who want to work for the betterment of their people, not to fight a revolution. And those two things need to really move and move quickly.
Thank you, Bruce. Here, the orchestra, we got to go. I appreciate your time. Bruce Jennelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University. 826, quickly to traffic on WWL. 8:46, 14 till 9, Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter, joins us now. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. How about yourself, Bobby?
I've listened.
I mean, sorry, Tommy.
I'm complimented that you would call me the Cajun Cannon. I've heard a lot of sideline reports. I've never heard one about the blue injury tent blowing away.
Yeah. No, that was kind of wild. It happened a few times. Like, it was when Kendre Miller was in there initially. And they actually had, at points, they had to have staffers kind of standing on the corners of the tent. I don't know if it wasn't staked down properly And that's why, you know, I brought that up mainly because, you know, when Blake Groupie missed that 53-yard field goal, I don't know how much this comes through on TV, but he went out there and I was like, he's not making this. Because you watch.
It doesn't come through on TV. I didn't listen to TV, but as far as the video, it doesn't come through at all. That's why I turned down the sound and turn up you guys. Because, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and it's tough to kind of gauge because, you know, you're standing down there at field level, and there's some of these stadiums where the wind not only comes in, but it kind of swirls. And I think that's the issue they were having with the tent, was like it kept blowing away from different directions.
Wait, so Blake Groupie comes in, and you said what?
Well, I mean, like when he went out there to attempt a 53-yard field goal, I was like, this is a mistake. I don't think anyone's making a 50-plus-yard field goal when the wind's blowing like this, especially because it wasn't a consistent wind. It was kind of gusting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd almost prefer when you have a standing like 20-mile-an-hour wind because you can just at least play it.
With golf, whereas at least, right, same kind of thing.
Trying to play the wind, and then the wind didn't gust, and it just stayed right where it was, you know? And so that's – but, yeah, it was the conditions were nasty to start that game. I think that played into why the offense was had such a hard time to begin the game, and it did clear up as the game went on, and I think that also played into why they seemed to have a little bit more success as the game went on. But, yeah, it was definitely not a comfortable day down there, to say the least.
Let's talk about the injuries.
Yeah, Eric McCoy, Kendre Miller, both done for the year. And I wasn't necessarily surprised by it. Like, a lot of times when you see these guys come out of the tent, you can kind of read on their faces, you know, how significant they think the injuries are. And, you know, both those guys, you could tell, you know, they were just looking up. They were just disgusted by, you know, what they were experiencing. Eric McCoy, I believe his injury is a torn biceps, which that'll end his season. Kendre Miller, torn ACL, that'll end his season. And you just hate it for both those guys because they dealt with injuries last year. Kendre Miller has obviously been a well-documented story. His career's kind of been snake-bit by injuries. He just worked so hard this year, and he finally had a long run of help to start the season. Torn ACL, it's just bad luck more than anything else.
You can't question anybody's toughness. You can't question this or that. The other thing is just it sucks. It just sucks.
Right.
But it's a torn ACL. What are you going to do, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's the third year in a row. He's going to be limited. I think his career, he had 8 games his rookie season, 7 games last – or 6 games last season, 7 games this season. So, I mean, that's just – he's a half-season player at this point. He's still under contract. He'll be back next year, but – You just don't know where you're going to be at that point. You don't know where he's going to be at that point. We'll see what, you know, it's going to be an opportunity for Devin Neal to step up and the rookie to get a much bigger run. You know, I talked to Alvin Kamara after the game, and he was like, man, it's like one of the smartest players I've ever been around. He understands what he's doing. He's just, you know, he's a rookie, but you don't worry about putting him in there because you know he can handle the assignments. He's been good in pass protection, which is going to be important for him. That's something the coaches applauded him for during camp. And as a rookie player, that's one of the bigger questions you have to answer before they feel comfortable putting you out there. Like, are you going to get our quarterback killed? If we put you out there, they send a blitz and you don't know what you're looking at. He's been very good in that part of the game. And we'll see what he has. He only got one carry in that game. He did handle kick returns because Kendre had been one of your kick returners. But I'm sure we'll see a much bigger – I don't know if it's going to be the – you know, they were trying to make it kind of a legitimate tandem with Kendre and Alvin, and you had kind of seen their carries kind of split very evenly over the last several games. I don't know if that's what – if you're going to try to tilt it a little bit more toward Alvin as you kind of figure out what you have in Devin. But I know they're excited about Devin. They were very excited to bring him in. As far as Eric – they have a couple options in terms of what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
I expect they'll keep it the simplest. Like when you talk about shuffling an offensive line, teams will generally err on the side of the fewest moving parts. So I expect their plan will be to just start Luke Fortner at center. He's the guy they traded for late in the preseason. They sent Colin Saunders to Jacksonville and brought in Luke Fortner because they needed center depth. Will Clapp, who they had signed to be their backup center, he got hurt in the preseason. So, Luke, that was his first kind of extended run yesterday, or Sunday, I should say, and they'll see more from him. They could also go with Torricelli Simpkins. He played center in the preseason, but, you know, he's primarily worked at guard. He's also a UDFA. That would be a big responsibility for him. And then Cesar Ruiz, obviously played guard in college. He's been played center in college. He's been a guard in the NFL. He hasn't really – it seems like over the last few years, they haven't really viewed him as – a center option. He's kind of been the guard with maybe a last resort center possibility. So they could theoretically put Cesar at center and have Simpkins or Radins play at guard. But again, that would be putting two players out of position that would be putting a backup at guard and another player out of position as opposed to keeping four of your starters in place and only having one backup. That's what I would expect.
Seems like you break it once. It would make more sense just to break it once, right? Not move all these different pieces around. What did Kellen Moore have to say about the quarterback situation?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a conversation that's had a lot outside of the building. You know, it's when you're a 1-6 team and you have a rookie quarterback sitting there, that's going to be a topic of conversation. We're going to talk about it. You know, the news is going to talk about it. It doesn't sound like they're considering making a quarterback change right now. This was Spencer Rattler's first real kind of blow-up game where you look at it and say, you probably didn't handle it that well. The turnovers were a problem. And they were kind of rough interceptions, right? Like, one of them was left behind Mason Tipton. The other one, it looked like maybe a miscommunication with Shaheed, kind of overthrew it. And the last one was a fourth down, which kind of had to make a play. But, the way they're looking at it is the Bears forced a ton of turnovers. It's on Spencer to come back and, like, build from that. He did say it's week to week. It's the first time we've heard that from him. So it's possible that they're a little bit closer than they have been. I don't think this was ever the week that you were going to try to go to a rookie. The week 12 against the Falcons always made the most sense to me. Coming off the bye, yep. You have 2 weeks to kind of install. But we'll have to see. And one thing about this team that I think has become clear is I don't know if they're a very good road team. You look at what's happened. When have their bad games come? When have their truly bad games come? It's been on the road. They played well at home. So I expect them to come back this week and bounce back in whatever fashion that looks like against the Bucs.
It makes sense to me after the bye as well. I know I was talking to Mike about this yesterday. It's a little bit late in the season, but you still have 7 games left to see what Tyler Shuck can do. At some point, you're going to have to play him, don't you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that by that point in the season, just based on how this has gone, the pressure would be off a little bit in the sense that, you don't want the rookie to go in and then he's the one who blows the season and suddenly it's like, well, he didn't really have a chance anyway. But now, that would just make the most sense to me. I don't think I know Bobby after the game was talking about week 9 in Carolina, and that's still a potential option. Mm-hmm. I just think if you waited this long to get him in there, which you have to credit them for the patience. Not a lot of teams would be this patient in terms of letting it play out with Rattler the way they have. But I don't think you wait this long and then say your first start's going to be on the road. You know, I just don't think that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it also, to me, shows that the Saints are playing a long game when it comes to this quarterback situation and not trying to win week to week. That sounds awful to say that, and I don't mean it to sound awful, but at this point, really, you got to start thinking about what's going to put you in the best position to win next year, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's how you look at it inside the,
you can't. No, you can't. And, can't go into the game saying,
right,
we're so just going to evaluate players. I understand that, but I'm just saying.
That's kind of the delicate balance you strike, but at a certain point, it has to be, we can't get to the end of a lost season and not know what we have in the rookie quarterback.
Exactly.
I think it's a lot more about that than it is about Spencer.
And other positions as well. That's right. That's exactly right. Not about Spencer. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it as always. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. He'll be on the sideline when the Saints take on Tampa Bay. 3 o'clock kickoff. All the action here on WWL, 855, 5 till 9. Traffic now, WWL.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure video game set in a lethal yet vibrant future Earth. Play as a raider, where you will settle into a fractured underground settlement, hoping to build a new home and legacy for yourself. In order to thrive, you must return to the surface, where lethal ARC machines roam unchecked and the motives of other raiders are dangerously unclear. But if you are fearless enough, who knows what you might find? Pre-order now for PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and PC. Available on October 30, rated T for Teen.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey,
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.